This is Nadia from the Relativity Podcast, and you're listening to Discussing Comics.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Discussing Comics, and you have found us officially on our 50th episode. So I want to welcome a new member of the team who has been on an episode of both Discussing Comics and Discussing Who, Ryan Kent. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. Very, very excited to be joining the team over at Discussing Comics.
Cool. Well, as they often say in X-Men lore, welcoming you to the team and hoping you survive the experience.
Trial by fire. This is my trial by fire issue.
Exactly. But speaking of trial by fires and someone who has withstood the fire, Ron Stevens, how are you?
Quite well. Quite well.
So, gentlemen, it's actually been since, I believe, if I'm not wrong here, it's been since the Christmas, or right about Christmas, since I spoke to the last time to each of you. So kind of really quick, catch us up on what's been going on with you guys for the start of 2020. And Ryan, I'll let you start first. What's been going on with you?
Oh, well, man, just looking into getting a house, which we actually did find a house. We're in the, I guess you could say, on the contract stage right now. So just in the whole process of buying a house. Recently, I got promoted at my job as well. Podcasting-wise, kind of been hanging low for a little bit. Just chilling, really.
Well, considering the fact of buying a house and even all of that that goes along with that, and the fact that you've got a new job, I think that kind of gives you a buy.
Yeah.
So, Ryan Kent, what about you? What's been going on with you?
Not too much. I mean, kind of in the same. My Instagram's also been kind of laying low recently. I've been recharging a little bit after the end of 2019, but I feel like, you know, weather's starting to get a little bit warmer. I'm starting to get a little bit looser and get back into everything. So,
to make you guys feel a little bit better, this podcast kind of took a mini hiatus a little bit in January 2020. We had one episode, of course, with the awesome Sergio from Reality Breach, where we talked about his most anticipated movies of 2020. But with Doctor Who coming back full force on January the 1st, and also Picard starting up with the 23rd of January, Discussing Trek and Discussing Who kind of gave all of my free time. But I'm glad to have you guys aboard. I'm glad you guys are here. And in 2020, I hope we can get a lot more episodes out, and I'm looking forward to having you guys be a part of that. So, the last time I was on with the both of you, we were talking about the House and Powers of X. So for anyone listening, if you have not read any of the new Dawn of X books, go out, read those books, put us on pause, come back, because from this moment forward, chances are spoilers.
Spoilers. Affirmative. Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Alrighty, spoiler warning has gone out. So my first question to you guys, and Ryan, I'm going to give it to you first. Are you reading anything from House of X, Powers of X, that has now gone into Dawn of X? Anything you're reading?
Right now, I'm reading X-Men, a couple of other books as well. Just recently picked up Fantastic Four and X-Men, and also Marauders and New Mutants.
Alright. Ryan, what about you?
I gave all of the titles a shot for at least one issue, maybe more in some cases. But as of right now, I'm only reading X-Men, the regular title.
I want to stay with you for a moment and ask this question. What made you give up the other titles?
Well, we kind of talked about last time. I feel like I was very enthusiastic coming out of House and Powers of X, really had a lot of forward momentum. And most of the titles I picked up, it kind of killed that momentum pretty quickly. There wasn't anything that grabbed me, and I'm not saying they were bad comics necessarily, but nothing, you know, I kind of go off the rule that, you know, did this make me want to keep reading? Did this make me rabid for the next issue? And really none of them have, including X-Men, which I'm still reading, but just kind of because I want to be reading at least one X-Men title, and that's the one that I feel like is, I don't want to say most important, but it's kind of the central X-Men book right now, so I stuck with that one, but none of the other ones really compelled me to keep reading.
All right. So, Ron, what about you? What made you choose the ones that you chose?
I guess I'm a little more, patient when it comes to these. Just trying to see where it's gonna lead to, at least for the first arc anyways for them. But for the most part, like Ryan was saying, it kind of House and Powers kind of just had this huge momentum going into it. Yeah, X-Men, it kind of has that same momentum with that standalone issues. As far as everything around it, kind of seems a little, I don't know, kind of, you can tell it's not hit.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I've actually read all of them, and currently I'm still reading all of them, but I am least happy and will most likely soon give up Fallen Angels as well as X-Force. I actually was really hoping to like X-Force. I don't know. This feeling that it gives me is just the artwork. I can't really connect with the artwork. And some of the things that they've done with Domino, I just don't like. And Fallen Angels, I know they're trying to give Kuanin her own backstory, and I get that. And it's been an interesting story, but it just felt like a story that could have probably have been told in one issue that was spread across five or six issues.
I can see that. It's funny you bring up those two titles, because if I'm being frank, those were the, I said I tried all the issues. Those were the two that I didn't even hem and haw about dropping. Those were the two I disliked the most.
Interesting.
After reading one, especially Fallen Angels, I really, I gave it a shot, but especially the artwork. I felt the artwork in that first issue, at least, was very poor, and I barely finished it, honestly.
And I know that different artists have different way of interpreting things, but do you find yourself at times, and I think you kind of just answered this question, Ryan, but do you guys find yourself at times giving up books or just thinking this artwork is not for me and I'm not wasting my money on it?
100%. I don't want to say art is the most important part to me, because, the whole beauty of this art form is, words and pictures working together. But if it's, I can go with a bad story and really beautiful art way easier than I can go with a good story and lousy art. That's a real hard hurdle for me to jump, at least.
Yeah, I can get along with the story. As long as there's a good story, I can look past the art. Because you would like for a perfect marriage, you would like for the art and the story to actually to have a good mend. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes you're not going to get that good combination with the two. But if I can at least get a good story out of it, then I'll hold on to it for a while, because I notice sometimes when people aren't really gelling with the art, you eventually see somebody, a different artist, on the book later on.
True.
Yes, especially now that they've kind of doubled the shipping schedule and most artists cannot keep up with a monthly or, now it's bi-weekly book at all. So
right.
They churn through them pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I actually forgot to mention one of the books, Marauders. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another one. That one and Excalibur. I did have those, too.
Ryan, you said you did not check out Excalibur. Was there a reason why?
When I went back and looked at, kind of assessed everything I'd read, I realized I didn't get it. And, I made a point to try all of them, even the titles I didn't think I would like. But for some reason, I don't know if it was just, they sold out when I had gone, or I just missed it when I went to the store. But I don't have a big history with Excalibur besides their relation to the X-Men. I've never read their book, but I did mean to check it out. I don't know why I didn't pick it up. I think I just have a blind spot for that one.
Let me ask you guys, we see this is phase one. So we see a new resurgence of X-Men comics. What do you guys consider to be the biggest strength of this post, House and Powers of X storyline? Do you guys see that we're kind of getting into the status quo again, or do you still see it as fresh and different? And if so, what's the strength? And Ron, why don't you take that one first?
Well, I like to say what I liked about this whole spectrum of X-Men now is that they basically are united now. They're all united and realizing they're really trying to go for all for the same thing, really. It's basically having peace for all mutant kind and realizing their main threats are humans. That right there, having that spectrum, I like that. And then having them actually having the position of power, in my opinion, I think where it should have been in a long time. I don't think we have actually seen them in this. I guess I don't. Most people say they're like in God mode, or they're pretty much like too powerful now. But I feel like this is where they should have been like years ago, right now. And I kind of like that Jonathan Hickman could put them in this position now.
I'll agree with a lot of what you said there. I do think that there is, you know, this is what they should have been doing a long time ago if all the mutants united. You know, we've read 50 years of stories of them living in Westchester, kind of status quo. So it's nice that they kind of threw away the rule book. You know, I do appreciate that they're not just, you know, running their head into the wall, doing the same thing over and over again like they've been doing forever. I like that they're trying to keep it fresh. But yeah, I guess I haven't seen it try really revert to the status quo yet. But like I said, I'm only reading the regular X-Men book, which is really kind of scattershot. It really isn't telling one continuous story. So maybe I'm just missing that in the other books.
I don't think you are. I think, you know, I think there are some levels and some layers that you get from reading the other books. I mean, and I get that and I understand that, but I don't see a singular narrative. And what I had hoped X-Men would have been is, it would have been the continuation and the feel that we got from mm-hmm. House right. and Powers. Right. And those others would just have like layered on to that main narrative. But I agree with you. I don't see a full singular narrative going from this, you know, main X-Men title.
Yeah. And the thing is about Hickman is that he's a world builder.
Right.
And I think this is probably the most vast world he has built with any books he's done with Marvel. Might be a little too big for him because, like, it's great that he has a writing team behind this now, where he has, like, Zdarsky with the Fantastic Four and the X-Men book, and Gary Dugan is doing Marauders, and I think he's doing the Cable book that's coming out next month. Hickman's also doing New Mutants as well, and you have Howard with Excalibur. I think he may have needed probably another writer or two to have a book that would be more that'll fall in line with the main title he's doing with X-Men to help out, like you were saying, to get that single narrative feel. Because a lot of these books, yeah, are supposed to be connected to X-Men, but a lot of these teams are kind of still doing their own things right now.
One of the biggest changes, other than them being united and, of course, living on this island nation, is the fact that you've thrown the death wish or the death ability or the fact of being able to die. You've thrown that out the window. I will go ahead and say I love the aspect of we're seeing characters that got killed off at some point in X-Men publication history coming back. And that's cool. But what do you feel of the idea that, oh, well, as long as you can be re-uploaded or you've been downloaded and whatever and et cetera and so forth, that death, there's no being scared of death?
You know, if you're taking death off the board, you're basically taking one form of drama kind of away from the overall story. Because, you know, these are superheroes. You know, the fact that they can die at any time is kind of part of the ongoing drama. If you're taking that away, it presents a really interesting narrative. Like, where does the conflict come from then? And my favorite issue that I've read out of this coming out is actually the latest issue of X-Men, which is kind of a solo Mystique story. I don't know if you guys have gotten around to reading it. Yes. It came out this week, last week. I don't know. The big conflict in that book is Charles has the ability to bring people back, but who he's choosing to bring back is... Well, what's the moral dilemma with bringing back some of these people who have done terrible things or could do terrible things once they're back? I think I really like the way they're using it as a way to introduce a kind of drama that we don't normally get in these stories.
Mm, very good point. Because at the end of the day, remember, Moria was like, no precogs. And of course, she doesn't want Destiny back for right. obvious reasons.
Right. And that might be, you know, the leak that sinks the ship. You know, it mm-hmm. seems like Mystique is really... I don't know if they're setting up to be the big bad guy necessarily of this story arc, but there's definitely drama building between her and Charles. Mm-hmm. And Charles doesn't look great by any of this anyway.
Considering, and Ron, I'm going to point this one to you. The fact that we see in Marauders, Kitty Pryde, or Kate Pryde, as she is now being called, cannot enter Krakoa. And she is one of the old school X-Men for all intents and purposes now. And she cannot enter Krakoa up to the point to where does she have the ability to be resurrected specifically within story with some of the things that are happening. So why do you think Kitty cannot go on to Krakoa?
I don't know. I'm not too sure on that one, honestly. It's kind of weird anyway, sort of fact, because certain, I kind of have an iffy feeling about how what they consider who is to be a mutant anyways, because I feel like, I mean, granted, yeah, if you're born with a mutant gene, yeah, that makes you a mutant. But what does that make for, like, Captain America or the Fantastic Four or Spider-Man? I'm not sure, but it does make it interesting.
Because it doesn't really make sense unless there's a ulterior reason, you know, like what is the island's motive for rejecting her? And Ryan, do you have any possible thoughts as to why the island specifically won't even let her walk through the portal?
I feel like the logical thing would be it has to do with something with her powers and her phasing ability not interacting well with the portals. Mm. But this is comic books, and I don't know. I don't know if they're setting up the drama to be like, you know, Kitty Pryde wasn't a mutant this entire time, and like a huge retcon. Like she's, like you said, she's closer to like a Spider-Man or a Captain America, like these metahumans who aren't, you know, necessarily mutants. But I just personally wouldn't like that. You know, Kitty to me is definitely one of my favorite X-Men, and you know, one that I really related to growing up. I really love her. You know, Astonishing X-Men is my favorite X-Men story, and that's very much a Kitty-centered story. So if they try to do that, I'm really not going to be receptive to that, at least as a fan, you know. But, you know, I don't know. That's obviously just a theory, and I picked up issues 1 and, like, issue 3 of Marauders. And of all the ones that I dropped, that's the one that I'm closest to, like, going back and giving another chance to, because I really like Russell Bowderman and Jerry Dugan. But I can't really speak with authority. It's just kind of a hunch I have that that's the kind of stuff they would try to pull.
So my speculation is I think they may have done this perhaps because if it's Krakoa that's keeping her out, then perhaps or it's designed to keep her out because of her powers, because of what is hidden underneath Krakoa. Because if they have some kind of fail-safes that no mutant can get through, but since she can walk through walls, she could potentially find Moria.
I like that a lot. Yes. And if I remember right, don't they have not a prison, but aren't they like keeping people like Sabretooth who are too like dangerous to interact and you can't send them back, and they just have them down there? You're right, she could discover that, and that would be another thing that would just bring this all down on Charles's head, which is definitely going to happen at some point.
Along with the whole being reconning, basically being reborn as well. I don't think that's too great of a cog to have for them anyways. I think that's something that's made just for it to fail later on down the road. I think it's their way of bringing back certain favorite mutants back in the past and have that. And once they reach to that point, okay, we got enough people, mutants, like favorite mutants we want, now we can go ahead and cut it off at some point. So I see that happening somewhere down the line where that reborn stuff is going to come to a tragic end.
Okay. So let me ask you guys, and Ron, I think you're the one that mentioned the Fantastic Four X-Men crossover. Let me preface by saying I like Reed Richards, or I had been liking Reed Richards for a while, but there was a time during the first Civil War that I was like very anti-Reed Richards because of his siding on the Civil War and all
with
of that
Illuminati.
So I was not a big fan of Reed, but I had gotten to where, you know, I was happy Fantastic Four was back. But this reminded me of the reason that I do not like Reed Richards. So Ryan, do you know what happened in X-Men Fantastic Four number 1?
I do not. Nope.
Basically, in a nutshell, with Franklin, who is a mutant, his powers have been, the more he uses them, the more he loses them recently. Franklin is assuming that Reed is attempting to fix his powers and doing experiments to fix his powers. And in this comic, he and Ben have this conversation where Ben is telling this teenage Franklin, and Franklin says, hey, of all the things my father can do, he can't fix you and he can't fix me. And I find that interesting that he needs you as the thing and he's afraid of me as my powers. So it benefits him to keep you the thing and for me not to have powers. And Ben, of course, says, you know, no, don't, you know, your father wouldn't do that, et cetera, and so forth. The X-Men come to take Franklin to Krakoa. And there's a cool scene with him and Kitty. If you read the original Fantastic Four X-Men crossover back when this was right after the Mutant Massacre. And if you haven't read it, go back and read it because it's really, really good. But it goes back to some interactions and ties into some interactions that Franklin and Kitty had at that point. And Franklin, even though the X-Men are fighting the Fantastic Four because it's like, my son's not going and he should have a choice to go and back and forth, back and forth. Well, Franklin decides on himself, I'm just going to run through the portal and I can come back at any time. I'm controlling my destiny. So he runs through the portal. And what you find out is a human who goes through the portal just walks out the other side. And basically what Reed had been doing was he had been manipulating Franklin so that it would mask him as being a mutant. So when he ran through the portal, he just literally ran through like vines. He just came out on the other side, didn't teleport.
Oh.
What do you guys think of Mr. Fantastic basically taking away his son's choice in that matter?
I kind of liked Reed Richards' character. I think the Illuminati had always viewed him as not so favorite person in the world, and which is true. And even they admitted themselves that teaming up with the Illuminati is never a good thing because something always bad happens when they team up, which is true. And it shows you when they was in Hickman's New Avengers run, where they were trying to figure out a way to keep the occurrence happening, and their best solution was to blow up another world, which is kind of dark. Granted, you don't want the Earth you're living on too, but you get what I'm saying there, though. But this is Reed Richards basically being too smart for his own good in Fantastic Four and X-Men book. But also him being a parent as well. And I also, as being a dad myself, I kind of understand where he's getting from, where he's coming from, where you want the best for your child. If you had all the resources, you know, and knowledge to do that, how far would you go?
Let me put that question back on you. As a parent, do you think that is, I get the protecting thing, but right, do you think that is the right thing to do by taking that choice away? It's not that you did something to help him. You took something that was in his right to decide. You took that choice away from him.
Right. You're right. You did. And that's, and me, Grant, I'm not as far as a teenager, and at that point, at that age, they're in an age where they have to make decisions for themselves. They're trying to identify themselves at that age, and I feel like Reed just took that away from Ben, from Franklin.
I think Ron really nailed it. You nailed it on the head when you said too smart for his own good. I feel like if I have, you know, one sentence to really wrap up all that Mr. Fantastic is, that's like exactly the space in the Marvel Universe I want him to occupy. He's the smartest guy in the universe, but he can't see what's right in front of his nose sometimes. And he's like, you know, he's making these big plans because he really, he does have good intentions. He had, you know, he wants to be a good father. He really thinks what he's doing is right. But when you're as smart as he is, you get that arrogance too, where you think you're the only person who's right. You're the one who has the solutions and you start thinking more with your head than with your heart sometimes. And I really like, just from what you've told me, that sounds exactly like, you know, kind of exactly like Civil War, you know, because I agree. We're all Team Cap, I think, on this podcast. But I thought it really worked with his character to be on Team Iron Man.
Agreed. Like, totally
agree. I'm the smartest guy in the room. And this is obviously, you know, what the best thing is. But he's not really thinking with how that's going to affect the people. He's just thinking of the greater good at all times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's the road to destruction is paved with good intentions. I feel like that's Reed in a nutshell. And I really like the way they write his character like that.
And even in that same issue, and that's why I found it such an enjoyable read, not, you know, no pun intended, but you even had a la Civil War, after you see what Reed's done, you have Sue just kind of reading him the riot act, saying, you know, basically everything I was saying about you have no right to do this and you just destroyed trust, et cetera, and so forth.
I think that's also is, I mean, again, I didn't read this issue, but that's so true to character. That's exactly what Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm, that's what they, that's the arguments they should be having. I feel like that's really, there's really good tension and for the story in there.
Mm-hmm. So before I move on to the next wave that I want to talk about, I will say this about this book. If every one of the books were such an interesting read as the Fantastic Four X-Men crossover comic, they would all be, you know, like making an A on every single issue. Cause it, anytime you can sit here and have a quote unquote sort of philosophical conversation about who's right and who's wrong, that's good writing, you know?
And different people probably have different perspectives. Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
The next wave we have coming, we know that there is a Wolverine comic that's either out now or about to be out. There is a Cable comic that is coming. There is a new X-Factor comic that is coming. There is also a new Hellions comic that is coming. My question to you guys is this too many?
I'm going to say yes. I think there's, that's becoming a little overkill because I looked at, I think it was a solicitation for April, and you're getting like 15 X-Men books in the month of April. And
that's outrageous.
And none of them are second prints. So keep that in mind.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. I read a link or article where Hank Hickman did warn readers, like, you don't have to read every single X-Men book that's out there, which is fine, which is great. But it does put on this question of, like, where are all these books going to lead to? Like, what, like, okay, I get, everybody wants a Wolverine book because you can make a good story with a Wolverine book. But what are you going to do with Hellion or Cable or X-Factor? What is the narrative to that?
I agree.
When you say 15 books, I want to specifically, you know, remind people that are listening that this is 15 books in part because we are shipping on a bi-weekly schedule. So. Yeah. I think, in my opinion, this biweekly concept, when you've got that many books, I would much rather see a singular once a month X-Men title with the same artist and the same writer consistently month after month. Same thing with X-Force, same thing with Excalibur, et cetera, and so forth, rather than having them twice a month. And by 6 months down the road, whoever the writer or specifically the artist is burned out because they're just making it 90 to nothing trying to get the books out.
Right.
I think you oversaturate that. Tell me what you guys think.
I 100% agree. And I think this is, your original question was, is this too much? My answer is yes across the board for the entire comics industry. I do not like the way Marvel and DC's shipping schedule has become because it's okay. There's 15 books coming out. That means if you wanted to read everything, that's $60 a month just to read the X-Men line. That's pretty outrageous to me. And I you're right. Like, what is the through line going to be with a Cable book? I don't like, are there, you know, maybe I'm just ignorant, but are there is there a legion of Cable fans out there that are just clamoring for Cable to have his own book? It just seems like they're really kind of hitting the accelerator. And I guarantee if we, you know, recouped in another 6 months to take a look at this line, you know, a couple of these comics will have been canceled because there's no way for this line to carry this many titles.
I agree. And it's kind of, I think we had this discussion before too, when our Extremely Geeked Out, Ryan, during the comic books then and now. And we talked about how there was this the era back in the 90s where it was extreme era and where they had this plethora of X-Men books. Well, it's like they brought that back in a sense with all these books. I don't know. Like, and you mentioned it too. Like, are people really clamoring for a Cable book? I feel in all the books that's coming up within the next 2 to 3 weeks, I think X Factor was probably the most one that kind of caught my eye, because X Factor has been out of commission for years. So
yeah, that's now. Been a long time.
It's been a long time. I'm more excited for that one out of all of those books.
Yep. And, you know, speaking of X Factor, I'm excited to see, because this will be the first comic that you've had both characters, North Star and Aurora, in both the comic at the same time, probably since the original, and I may be wrong with this, but since the original Alpha Flight run. So I'm excited to see. And say what now?
I can't think of another time besides that original run from the 80s and 90s.
I can't either. So I'm excited to see them two in the same book for an extended period of time. I'm really excited about those two. Now, what I would like to see happen, and I'll tell you one that I think that could easily be replaced. You could replace Fallen Angels easily and replace it with X Factor. And if that was their game plan, is we're going to have this story, book number one, and it's going to be 12 issues, 8 issues, 6 issues. And then at the end of that, we're going to replace it with book number two. And we're not going to have any more than 7 books at a time. That would be cool. You know,
I really like that idea.
Tell different stories. But, you know, you guys talked about the extreme in the 90s whenever you had all the different X-Men books. I was reading all those books at that time. Number one, they weren't at least $2 to $3.99 a piece. They were about $1.25, and they weren't biweekly shipping like they are now. So if I had 10 books to read, I was spending about at most $12, $15 max per month.
Right.
Not 60 as we were calculating earlier.
And the more books you put out there, and the quicker you're just kind of churning them out more like product than like art. The quality is just going to dip. There's no way that it doesn't dip. And I agree 100% that if you put out just one X-Men book, you know, maybe a few auxiliary titles, but one main line, like, you know, how Uncanny was for years, just like the main X-Men book once a month with a really good writer and a really good artist, and made that the book to be reading. I feel like that's way more exciting than 7 meh books. You know, I'd take one really good book over 7 meh books any day, but that's just not Marvel's business plan right now.
All right. So let me ask you guys a question kind of to wrap up our conversation. And Ron, I'll point this one to you first. Is the X-Men as a franchise, are they in a better place than they were in February of 2019? What do you think?
I would say, yeah, they are overall. I think Jonathan Hickman has put them in a good place. But my concern is what's going to happen after he leaves writing it. A lot of his, I will say this, and I'll turn it to Ryan, but I noticed from a lot of the stuff that he's written, Marvel's kind of undone it in a sense with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And when he went to Avengers, and then he's now doing X-Men. And it's not, I don't know. I mean, like I said, all this stuff has been good. I mean, Fantastic Four, a lot of people didn't really appreciate it until later on. And then until when he got on the Avengers, people kind of appreciated it more. And then now here, everybody likes him, but Hickman is a very complicated writer, and a lot of people don't like slow reads. People want quick stuff and want to be done with it within 15 to 20 minutes of reading it. I'm really concerned what's going to happen after he's done writing this story.
Better than it was a year ago, 100%, because we're talking about it. You know, if it was February 2019 and you were having us both on a podcast, would the discussing the state of the X-Men books be a top 10 even topic?
Good
Not
point.
Really, just because, you know, we all know the behind the scenes, you know, Fox owned the X-Men and that Marvel kind of pushed them aside for years and years and years. And I felt like until this event last year, last summer, that the X-Men books were C-grade at best for probably the last, I don't want to say decade. And obviously there are bright spots in there, but they weren't noteworthy, which is the worst thing for something to be. You know, be good, be bad, but at least be worth talking about, worth discussing. And
right.
A year ago, they definitely weren't. You know, they were just books on the stands. And the fact that we're talking about it here today, I would say definitely that it's in a better spot.
All right. Mm-hmm. So here's my last question. And my last question is, if you could see a character that you would like to see showcased that's not being showcased now, who would that character be? And Ryan, why don't you take that first? Hard question, huh?
It is a hard question. Because of all these books they have, they're utilizing them fairly well. I don't know. I like to see them try to do a Cyclops story or a Magneto story, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think those two are probably one of my most compelling ones. I was going to think about Storm, but I don't know. I read the last Storm story I read. It wasn't all that great. But yeah, I think Cyclops or maybe Magneto.
Okay. All right, Ryan, what say you?
You know, it's coming out. The number one's coming out soon. I would have said Wolverine. Wolverine has kind of been, I mean, I don't even remember the last time a Wolverine proper book was on the stands. Like Logan, not Old Man Logan, not X-23, but actual, you know, Wolverine. So I'm very excited for that one. But if that's off the table, I do, like you said, I love Cyclops and I would love to see a Cyclops story. I agree with that. Storm would be another one. I'm also a big sucker for Nightcrawler. I feel like you could tell a really compelling story with Kurt, you know, maybe not totally buying into all the stuff that the X-Men are spouting. Like, I feel like I'm surprised there hasn't been a voice of dissent in the X-Men. You know, there's not someone kind of raising their hand and be like, wait, this is kind of weird. And I feel like Kurt, with his, you know, his background as a religious man, I feel like you could tell a really great story with him. So I would say Nightcrawler.
Okay. Yeah.
Good choice. Good choice.
You know, I would like them to undo a retcon that they did in the comic to explain away this character's origin during the whole, and Ryan, I'm going to mention something that you mentioned, the Fox, let's push the X-Men aside. And it was almost, well, since we have this character in our movies, we've got to come up in the comics to say, oh, guess what? She's not really a mutant. She's not, Magneto's daughter.
I hate that.
And, you know, neither is Quicksilver. I would love for them to retcon that away, reestablish them as mutants. And yes, you've seen Quicksilver and, you know, X-Factor before. You've seen him around the mutant storylines. But for the most part, other than No More Mutants, you've never really had Wanda interact as part of being the X-Men since being a part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. I would love to see her on a team of true X-Men team. That would be cool to me.
I 100% agree. I would love that. I hate that retcon. That is one of my least favorite retcons they've done.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Well, cool. It sounds like we are all in agreement. So I'm going to ask a different question. I'm not going to ask where you can be found. I would ask instead this time, I want to ask, what else are you reading or watching that others might be interested in? And Ron, since you have just been reading and watching, I'm sure, a whole bunch of good things, what are they? What's something you're reading or watching?
I enjoyed Watchmen. That was actually a pretty good series. I wasn't expecting it to be good. Like, I wasn't not sure what to expect from it, from this being a series. I wasn't sure if they can actually tell a good Watchmen story through a series. And it's actually turned out pretty good.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Ryan, what say you? What reading or watching have you been doing?
All right, I'm going to give you one reading and one watching.
All right.
Reading, I just wrapped up, I tracked down all the issues and read the Batman Universe, the Brian Michael Bendis Batman book from DC from last year. I thought that was excellent. Anyone who is looking for a great standalone, fun superhero Batman story, please go out and find Batman Universe. I'm super stoked to be talking about this and be talking about a really good Batman book right now. And then watching, actually last night, I got to go watch Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn Birds of Prey, and I thought it was really, really great. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was kind of zany and kind of an assault on the senses, but at the end of the day, I thought it was a fun action movie with some really good characters, and it's, you know, good to see, you know, some of these, you know, I saw Huntress and Renee Montoya and Black Canary, these characters I love that I never thought I'd see in a movie. So that I really enjoyed that.
Awesome. Sweet. So I will say that our other co-host, Clarence, spurred me on to watching Watchmen. And I started with episode 1 yesterday, and I think I am up to episode 7 right now.
Are you almost done?
I'm almost done. How many is it, 8? Just 8 or is there 10?
It's either 8 or 9.
Oh, okay.
So you're about there.
All right. Well, I have a feeling that once I've watched it and we've all watched it, we can all convene and do a good review of it, because I'm not a Watchmen comic fan and I was not a Watchmen movie fan, but I am a big enjoyer of watching this Watchmen series. I was captivated by it.
That's interesting to hear that you don't like Watchmen the book necessarily, but you're liking the series as much. That's going to motivate me to finish the series, because I've only seen the first two episodes.
Clarence messaged the group earlier this morning after I said that I was on episode 5 or 6 and was like, don't kill yourself watching. It was like, no, I can't stop watching it. It's really.
As I was, I saw the conversation in between, I was taking my notes. I was seeing that you two talking about it.
Gentlemen, glad to have you both on. This was a lot of fun. And for everyone listening, thank you for listening. Let us know what you think about House and Powers of X, if you read that, and any of the Dawn of X titles. Do you agree with us? Do you not agree with us? Give us some feedback and go to facebook.com/groups/discussingnetwork and join our group and joining in on the conversation. So guys, thanks again. And for everyone listening, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Wi-Fi sci-fi.
Wi-Fi sci-fi.
Wi-Fi sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
What is Wi-Fi sci-fi?
It's Girl in Space.
Tales of Sage and Savant.
The Ninth World Journal.
Oz 9.
Moon Base Theta. Out.
It's Girl in Space.
Wi-Fi sci-fi.
What is Wi-Fi sci-fi?
Find out at wifisci-fi.org.
Wi-Fi sci-fi.